When a mob of pro-Trump extremists stormed the Capitol building last week, there was a lot of discussion among journalists over how to describe what was happening. The main story from the Associated Press referred to a, quote, chaotic protest aimed at thwarting a peaceful transfer of power, a melee, and a raucous, out-of-control scene. The AP also said that the words mob, riot, and insurrection were okay for reporters to use. Protest was deemed too mild on its own. Some people used the word coup, the AP said, to only use that term when attributed. In a tweet from NPR's Lulu Garcia-Navarro, quote, we won't be calling the people who stormed the Capitol protesters. They are pro-Trump extremists, and what they are doing is insurrection. Some media watchers have made comparisons to the treatment of protests and sometimes violent protests over the summer. Others say there's not really an apples-to-apples comparison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How would you describe last week's violence in Washington? What word would you use? Did the media generally get it right in explaining what happened? Does word selection matter in media coverage of events like this? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Mike Wagner is a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison and an expert at the UW's Elections Research Center. Mike, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Is it worth, Mike, sitting down and thinking about our word choice in the media in an event like this? And I don't know, there aren't a lot of events like this, but should we be reflecting on our word choices here?
I think we should reflect upon how we describe what happened and try to stick as close to the verifiable truth as we can and stick as close to definitions that experts in the area that's relevant give us to talk about things. And so I think doing that can help provide clarity for what's happening, and it can help us think about what we want the remedy to be to what it is that's happened.
But I would guess, Mike, if I asked 50 political scientists to define a coup for me or an insurrection for me, I might get 53 different answers. Like, it's how do we go with the experts when there's probably disagreement among the experts?
There is sometimes disagreement among the experts, but those are, I would say, more at the margins and less about, say, what happened at the Capitol. There is widespread agreement amongst political scientists around the globe that there was a politically motivated attack on the U.S. Capitol by a violent mob. Whether you want to call it a coup or not, I think is still a reasonable question. The coup d'etat project's codebook, this is from the Klein Center at Illinois, which has devoted a lot of its work to studying this kind of thing, says that a coup has to have a person or persons who initiated the coup. The target must have meaningful control over policy. There must be a credible threat to the leader's hold on power. There must be illegal or irregular means used to seize or remove or render powerless the target of the coup, and it must be organized. And arguably, that's what happened at the Capitol. I think there are reasonable people who might debate that particular issue. But if we're wordsmithing whether it was technically a coup, we already know that it was terrible.
Zooming out from the specific word selection, Mike, what have you thought so far about the media coverage you've seen? And there's a lot of different media, obviously, but what has struck you about the media coverage so far since last Wednesday?
Well, it's a situation that's unique in a couple of ways, one of which is that what we saw in live time was much more sanitized than what really happened. Once we've been able to get video of what occurred last week at the Capitol, it was much more violent than it appeared with the video showing kind of the outside of the Capitol that we saw in live time. And so, it was much more violent than we thought. And I would say the second thing is that there's been such a gap, an unwillingness of public officials who should be investigating this to talk about it. There aren't official sources for the news media to rely upon to do their work. Normally, the Department of Justice, the FBI, would be all over this in terms of explaining, here's exactly what we know, here's what we're going to be doing next. There would be regular news conferences. Normally, if a group of violent protesters and a violent mob, a violent politically motivated attacking group, went after the United States Capitol, and we had people calling to hang the vice president and shoot the Speaker of the House, we would expect the president to be making lots of public statements about that. That's not what we've seen. And so journalists have not had typical traditional official sources to rely upon, which has made it harder, I think, for them in some ways to do their work.
That point you made about as bad as things looked on Wednesday, the more we see, the worse it looks. And that's being assembled, as you say, not necessarily by official sources, but you know, the New York Times had kind of a moment by moment showing how close to these actual members of Congress and senators the people invading the Capitol were, and the violent scenes in there. How do we make that clear now as a contrast to what we saw initially, to make it clear that, hey, the scope of this is worse than it looked at the beginning?
I think just by trusting the audience to believe the verifiable truth. And the verifiable truth is that this was violent. It was politically motivated. It was organized for weeks on social media. The president himself spoke to the crowd and said, go to the Capitol. These are all things that happened, and they're all verifiable and easy to verify. And so telling the audience about that and then showing the audience the consequences of that behavior with the actual violence that we saw in the Capitol, with the destruction of a lot of elements of the Capitol in order to get in you know, stealing things from lawmakers' offices. And again, I mean, I don't know that we can repeat this enough. People who had gotten into the Capitol and were away from police were calling to hang the vice president, were calling to shoot the Speaker of the House. That is incredibly distressing.
Talking to Mike Wagner, professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison, expert at the UW Elections Research Center, looking at media coverage of last week's attack on the U.S. Capitol and word choices on how to describe the people who participated in different elements of the events. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Michael?
So I have kind of just a brief two-part thing. First off, I think word choice basically comes down to either insurrectionist or domestic terrorist, whatever you want to go with, either one, and equivalent terms are both acceptable. I think, by and large, WPR has done a good job in their coverage. I don't think protesters, that's hardly an appropriate term. It was not a protest. And then additionally, I think the idea that one can't compare police treatment in this incident, them opening and waving people through barricades, the idea you can't compare that to the police treatment of peaceful, often peaceful Black Lives Matter protests, I think that idea is absurd on its front. And in some cases, I mean, cities around the country, it was some of the same police forces, and it's the same police forces who are going to be dealing with any potential armed, well, I won't say armed protests, because who knows, but in other capitals.
Michael, thanks a lot for calling in. First of all, saying, you know, not protesters in the Capitol, but he says terrorist or insurrectionist. Mike, something we've come across in other protest situations where there was also violence is some of our guidelines have been to say describe the peaceful protesters as being protesters. And when something else violent happens, describe that group as something else. Trying to get into the finer points and distinguish between what one group was doing and another group was doing. How do we tease that out?
Well, you know, in this case, and I think the caller is quite right. This is different than a Black Lives Matter protest or basically all of them that we saw around the country over the last several months. This was a group traveled to the Capitol and wanted in, and many of them got in and broke things and threatened people to the point where law enforcement officials felt the need to shoot one of those people and killing them. You know, that's not a protest, right? I think insurrection is a perfectly appropriate term. I think domestic terrorism is a reasonable thing to call it as well. And so I think the caller is quite right about the points he was making.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Dan now in Marshfield. Dan, hi.
Good afternoon.
What do you want to bring up, Dan?
I agree that it wasn't an insurrection. I think if you look up the definition, it exactly is what took place on the 6th. But I do agree with a lot of people's comments that, and I know we're talking about BLM and their protests and how some of them turned violent, but I'm thinking back to Portland when the assault was on the courthouse, I believe, and President Trump called in federal troops to protect that, and the news covered that as it was almost like the worst thing that could have happened, and yet there was an assault on a federal building at that time. So I guess I agree that what we're talking about today, about what happened on Wednesday, was exactly what took place with the insurrection, but that the media did not cover it the way it probably should have been covered for other aspects either.
Dan, thanks for the call. This is something people are bringing up a lot, Mike, that the media unfairly overlooked the violence during that came along with or came after Black Lives Matter protests over the summer.
Yeah, none of those were trying to literally stop the practice of democracy from occurring. What happened at the Capitol was during the Electoral College certification vote. That's a hallmark of our democratic system under the United States Constitution. And protesting and asking law enforcement to not kill Black Americans is not trying to disrupt the legal and legitimate practice of democratic governance in the United States. They're not comparable issues. And with the respect to Portland, the large element of the pushback against the federal troops there was the indiscriminate arresting of people who weren't at the Capitol, but just around protesting on city streets, which again is different than those who broke into the Capitol chanting to hang the Vice President of the United States and shoot the Speaker of the House.
Thanks for the call. We're talking about how the media has been describing what happened at the U.S. Capitol last Wednesday. Mike Wagner stays with us, professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think mob, riot, insurrection are appropriate terms? Which words would you use to describe those who entered the Capitol, who attacked the Capitol? Call it at 800-642-1234. Share your thoughts on the media coverage of the event, what you'd like to see going forward. Again, 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're looking at the media coverage of last week's mob at the U.S. Capitol. Mike Wagner is our guest, a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison, expert at the UW Election Research Center. You can join in with your thoughts on what you've seen in media coverage, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Alex is with us in Prairie du Chien. Alex, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to say that it's really important that the proper words are used, because you can already see it in certain news outlets. They're trying to make it sound less as bad as it was. It was a coup d'etat. It failed. It didn't have to be successful in order to be a coup. But also language, it's important for culpability. Trump said, oh, well, look at my speech. I didn't tell him to go to the Capitol. But if you look at everything he said over the last 6 months, it was inevitable that he pushed it. And now they want to change the wording so they're not responsible for everything that they should be responsible for. Thank you.
Alex, thanks a lot for the call. Mike, he mentioned some news outlets downplaying the events. There's a whole web of kind of alternate conservative sites that present their own spin on news. What do you think of what people are maybe seeing totally different from each other if they're watching one set of news sources versus this other set of often fake news sources?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the case that some folks, especially people who are really interested in politics and have relatively extreme views, these are folks who are often more likely to get more of that information diet that is feeding them stuff that's simply not true, telling outright falsehoods about the nature of what happened at the Capitol. And also, as the caller said, you know, downplaying what happened. If it wasn't such a big deal, then maybe we don't need to spend so much time thinking about it. But if it was a big deal, if it was really violent, which of course it was, then that raises a whole host of questions about how these kinds of violent, politically motivated attacks on our government are built, what the network that built them is like, how it spread on social media, how the president used it to his advantage, how many Republican lawmakers used it to their advantage. These are all big questions that deserve a public reckoning. And when news outlets either lie about what happened or downplay what happened, we miss the opportunity to take this as seriously as we ought to take it.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Chris now in Madison. Chris, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. This is very intriguing. And back when I used to commit reporting, we were so constricted in what we could call. We could not call a spade a spade. And I envy reporters now because I think ever since the news sources had got together and said, okay, if what Trump is saying is a lie, an observable, objective lie, we will call it that. And that's why I think they have a much easier time now calling this insurgency or whatever.
Chris, thanks a lot for that call. There's a reluctance, Mike, to use words like lie in referring to any politician. I think people in the media think it makes us sound biased when we use it. What do you think of what Chris had to say about calling a lie a lie?
Well, you know, a lot of the contemporary news media is built upon a foundation of working as hard as possible to be objective and balanced. The truth, unfortunately, is not always balanced, and so that raises a problem for journalists. But with the specific question of whether to call a lie, that's a really tough one for reporters. Reporters want to stick to the verifiable truth, and they can't know what's in someone's heart, and they can't know what's in someone's head. And so when somebody says something that's blatantly false, most mainstream outlets still say the president falsely asserted or the president made this claim. That claim is false. Most still don't call it a lie. If the president has been corrected, if there have been credible reports or communications with the president that what he's saying is not true, and then the president says it again, then I've seen more news organizations be willing to say the president is lying, because then they can kind of verify that he had good information and chose to ignore it and then said something that wasn't true. But journalists tend to be pretty reluctant to, when they're reporting, say what's in somebody's mind. Columnists often will infer what the motivation for something was when a politician says something. But, you know, the opinion side of a news organization is different than the news side, even though most of us who use the news organizations tend not to think of it that way.
Thanks for that call. And, Mike, that makes me think of the issue that's at the heart of all of this. Since November 7th, we've known that Joe Biden won the presidential race in 2020. There were court challenges that had to go through, and maybe something would have come out of them. I don't know. But for all intents and purposes, we've known for 2 months now. And there's this sustained campaign to question that. And, you know, again, baseless claims or false statements and things like that. How should we characterize that 2 month running misinformation campaign?
I think it speaks to the importance of political leadership. When lawmakers tell their constituents the truth, constituents tend to accept it even if that news is bad, right? But when lawmakers say, oh, we might have won anyway, or this may well have been stolen, we need to investigate, when there's no evidence that it was stolen, there's no evidence that more investigation would change any outcome, the votes were counted, they were recounted, they were adjudicated more than four dozen times. Each time, Joe Biden was the winner by a considerable margin. It just makes us wonder, what is the purpose of lawmakers in this case, in this particular issue? What does it make? What are we to think of Republican lawmakers who say, oh, I'm not sure Biden won? There's no reason to say that. There's no legitimate reason to say that. And when they tell their constituents, there's a good reason to think that you lost, what are they to do but to be really upset about that? It is upsetting to think if you lost something when you didn't lose fair and square. But in this case, the president lost fair and square, and it is up to Republican lawmakers to tell their constituents that. That is a fundamental responsibility of being a Democratic representative, is to tell constituents the truth about elections. And the reason is that in a democracy, elections serve the losing side as well, because there is another chance. There is another election. If elections don't matter, then we shouldn't have them. But they do matter. And so we have to accept when we lose and live to fight another day, the next election day.
In our last minute, Mike, what are you watching for next in journalistic coverage between now and Inauguration Day?
Well, I'm really interested to learn more about how the politically motivated violent attack on the Capitol was organized. And I'm curious about learning more about who was involved and what the plans are for Inauguration Day. Many of your listeners probably know that there's already boarding up the windows at our Capitol here in Wisconsin. So I'm looking for what can we learn about what happened on Wednesday, and how can we extrapolate that and learn about what might be happening in the next week.
Mike, thanks as always for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Mike Wagner is a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison and an expert at the UW Elections Research Center. We talked to them about how the media has been describing the mob of pro-Trump extremists in the U.S. Capitol building last week.